Welcome to Peak Health, a radio show dedicated to empowering you to take back control of your health so that you can have the freedom to live the life that you want. I'm Lisa Morse, naturopathic physician on the island at Fern Cove Natural Medicine. I'm dedicated to helping you uncover the root cause of your symptoms so that you can get back on the road to feeling well again.
And I'm Claire Denise, certified health and wellness coach and a personal trainer. Our show is going to bring you information to help you take charge of your health. We're going to cover topics like IBS, heartburn, thyroid disorders, autoimmune diseases, osteoporosis, nutrition, and lots more. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Claire.
We're back again.
We are back again. We're continuing our talk about diabetes.
I'm glad because I have lots of questions and I think it's a great topic.
It is a great topic. It's really relevant.
Sure, today especially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so last time we just talked about, you know, what is diabetes? What are the risk factors for type 1 and type 2? What the differences are between type 1 and type 2 diabetes? We talked about the symptoms and then we talked about the lab values that diagnose diabetes. So, you know, check out that show if you didn't catch it and you're interested in that information. And then today we're going to start talking about self-monitoring of your blood glucose, which I believe is the best tool for figuring out what's going on with your blood glucose.
Well, I think that's a great idea because sometimes people put off going to the doctor. And if it's something that you can take charge of yourself, for not very much money, then, you know, maybe more people would be likely to do that.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't advocate it just, you know, instead of going to the doctor. I just feel like you can get a better idea, you know, of what your blood sugars are doing versus just going once for your fasting blood sugar with your doctor and then, you know, being done with it.
Yeah, and I think also, obviously, if people who do end up with diabetes do have to take their blood sugar and be responsible for themselves. Mm-hmm. So it's good practice, and it could be that you could avoid getting diabetes if you just do the ounce of prevention.
Exactly. Yeah, so I recommend that people get a blood glucometer. You can get, there's a certain brand, Neo brand, N-E-O. That I've heard is good. You can get that online, and what you can do is you have to get all the supplies with it too, like the lancets and such. But what you can do is check your blood sugar when you wake up. You can check it before meals. You can check it, and then you want to check it an hour after your meals, and then 2 hours after your meals. And it's really useful information because the value that you're going to get 1 hour after you eat, it's going to tell you how much the food spiked your blood sugar. So you don't want your blood sugar going any more than about 30 to 40 points higher than it was before the meal. So say before your meal you were at 90, you wouldn't want it to go probably more than 130. So it's a good
an hour after you've eaten.
Yeah. It's a good way to tell if what you're eating is really spiking your blood sugar. And then the 2 hour value after your meal tells you if your insulin is working. So because by 2 hours, your body should have gotten that glucose into the cells with the insulin. So again, say you were 95 before you started your meal, then 140. At 1 hour, and then, at 2 hours, it's still 130. It means that your insulin is not working. It's not getting the glucose into your cells.
So if you buy this Neo blood glucometer, does it come with directions? Everything you need so that it says, here's how you clean your finger
Right. Absolutely.
And what to do with the lancet afterwards and those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you don't have to take a course in order to do it. You can just
learn
as you go. Okay.
Yeah. So again, you say you're going to eat a sweet potato with some butter on it. And say your blood sugar was 90 before and then it spikes to, 140, 150. It's too high. It's actually going to have a negative impact on your health. And then compare that maybe to you eat some broccoli or other steamed vegetables and some fish. Maybe it's only going to go up to 110. And so I'm not saying that a sweet potato is unhealthy. That's definitely a healthy food. But if you have blood sugar dysregulation, it may be not the best choice for you right now until you can improve your insulin.
I would just want to second that often people tell me that they have like a protein smoothie in the morning, but they have bananas and berries and juice in it. And it's too much sugar.
Yeah.
So even though bananas and berries and juice may all have some nutritional value, altogether, it's not good. And some vegetables even have a lot of sugar in them, like beets, for instance, or carrots, some of the squashes, potatoes. So you want to consider, even though they're vegetables, that they could not be good for your blood sugar.
Absolutely. I agree with you, Claire. Yeah. So again, just recommending, if you really want to know what's going on with your blood glucose, you know, get a glucometer and check it. It's a great way to take care of yourself.
So here's a simple question for you. Does it make a difference how much? Like if you ate a half sweet potato as opposed to a whole sweet potato?
Well, it's hard to say because everybody's different. Yeah, which is why you want to.
That's why you want to check.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, especially if you're diabetic. I mean, this is what diabetics do. They check their blood sugars so that they're adjusting their diet too.
I can't remember what the name of the book was. Maybe it'll come to me. But this person undertook, I think that he was actually diagnosed as an adult with type 1. And he undertook to check every single food he ate.
Really?
So that he knew exactly how it was going to react in his body. And he's written a book about it.
Cool.
I want to say his last name was Richardson.
Interesting.
But I'm not positive.
Interesting. Okay. So we're going to talk about treatment now. And so what do you think, Claire, is the number one treatment?
Prevention?
Yeah. Well, prevention, but...
Well, prevention, obviously, but the methodology would probably be mostly lifestyle, because I think it's a lifestyle diet. It's a chronic kind of condition that people live with and go on with their daily lives. So
yes, absolutely.
So is that right then?
You are right. You got an A+. So diet and physical activity are huge for this condition. And I think that's really empowering because, you know, I do think that most conditions can be helped with lifestyle changes, but with diabetes, I think there's a really great potential for reversing it with these lifestyle changes.
And, you know, I don't think they have to be, you know, complete about face of whatever you're doing currently. I mean, just even small improvements can make a big difference.
Yeah, I agree. So let's just talk about physical activity. I've read a study that this diet and physical activity where the people in the study, they had a change of diet and also they had increased physical activity, and they achieved 7% weight loss. And they had a reduced incidence of type 2 diabetes by 58%, which is huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there was another group that didn't do the diet and the physical activity, and they were just on metformin, which is a common medication to treat type 2 diabetes, and their incidence was actually only reduced by 31%. So it's a great difference, you know, 58% to 31%. And so in talking about physical activity, you know, how does it work? Well, part of it is actually the weight loss, obviously. Remember, we talked about the abdominal obesity, increases insulin resistance. But actually, the actual activity of exercise, so aerobic, especially strength training, as well as stretching, helps to increase the sensitivity of the cells to insulin. So
sure. And, you know, that gives you a lot of options to find something that you like.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think it's just really amazing. And so I just encourage people that, you know, our listeners who maybe are pre-diabetic and diabetic, and everybody, not just those people, but just get out and move, you know, move your body in some way that's enjoyable to you.
True. And then that's mostly because you're more likely to do it.
Exactly.
And also, if you get someone who is willing to do it with you, sometimes doing it with another person, it reduces the letting yourself off the hook mm-hmm. when you're meeting someone else. Yeah. And it's a lot more fun. You can solve the world's problems while you exercise.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. I like that. Okay, so physical activity and then diet is huge, obviously. And the Mediterranean diet is a diet that's been studied a lot. There are plenty of studies showing that, you know, it's helpful for obesity and type 2 diabetes. And so are you familiar with the Mediterranean diet, Claire?
Oh, a little bit. I think, you know, I think the idea is that you eat a lot of vegetables mm-hmm. and whole grains, mm-hmm. Maybe some legumes, maybe yeah. some fish.
Yeah.
Healthy fats.
Yes, exactly. Nuts and seeds and olive oil. Yeah. So, yeah, look into that if you know, that sounds good to you. But I do want to say that everyone is different. And so it's important to determine the best diet for yourself. And how are we going to do that?
By monitoring our blood.
Yes, exactly.
And seeing how it reacts when yes. we've eaten different things.
Exactly. Great.
I did see something on not the source of all true things, but on Dr. Oz, where they compared eating a candy bar to eating a piece of whole grain bread. Mm-hmm. And the whole grain bread didn't come out first. I think the candy bar had nuts in it. It kind of helped keep the rise in blood sugar down.
Oh, so you're saying with the whole grain bread, it
went up quite a bit.
Spiked the blood sugar. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
More than you would think. So.
Right. Interesting. Yeah. So that leads me to talk about the glycemic index. I don't know if you're familiar with that, Claire.
I am. Sure.
Okay. So basically how much our blood sugar spikes with different foods. There's also something called the glycemic load. That one is supposedly a little bit more accurate, and it has to do with, you know, how many grams of carbohydrates are in the food. So a comparison that you can make is like a half cup of watermelon versus a half cup of grape nuts cereal. The glycemic load for the watermelon is 4.3 versus 33. For the grape nuts, and that's because the grape nuts have a lot more carbohydrates in there.
So, and I think that's a real issue because even on packaging, when they'll talk about total carbohydrates on packaged foods, you can subtract off the fiber, but there's often a lot of carbohydrate left in there.
Right.
And 15 grams of carbohydrate is considered one serving in mm-hmm. the diabetic spectrum. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes with one food, or if you're eating multiple foods that have carbohydrates in them, you end up with just too much. And there you are with too much sugar in your blood, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So as far as glycemic load goes, something that would be considered a low glycemic load is 10 or less. You know, medium is 11 to 19, and then high is 20 or more.
So where would you find the glycemic load?
That's a good question. I was thinking that we should have some way to tell our listeners.
Yeah, I mean, the glycemic index then is just how quickly the blood sugar spikes.
Uh-huh.
For instance, it's based on sugar. Refined white sugar is 100, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so if you eat a grapefruit, for instance, it might be down at 43. But if you eat a piece of candy or whole wheat bread or sweet potato or whatever, it might be much higher.
Mm-hmm.
But the glycemic load is essentially how much energy is in a particular food and in that particular volume of food, too, like one serving.
Right.
The idea would be to eat foods that have a lower glycemic load.
Mm-hmm.
So there just isn't as much sugar in your bloodstream, and there's not as great a call for insulin to manage it.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, yeah, I don't have any resources off the top of my head, but, you know, the internet.
Well, the one thing I would say, one of my favorite is called nutritiondata.com.
Okay.
Because you can look at all fresh foods, and they also mm-hmm. have all kinds of chain restaurants and things like that. And a lot of, like, if you put oatmeal, there's probably 20 some different ways that oatmeal can be prepared or that they've evaluated.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember if a glycemic load is on there, but you can certainly get an idea of which foods are going to have more fiber, what percentage of carbohydrate is in them, and so forth.
Yeah, that's great. Nutritiondata.com.
Glycemic load, too, I think is, you're going to have some high fiber foods. But you could also have low fiber foods. So okay. You could have simple or complex carbohydrates. So I think you want to stick with a lot of vegetables that are like green.
Yeah, absolutely.
And lean proteins and healthy fats, and lean away from anything that breaks down into sugar rather quickly. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's see. So we talked about the Mediterranean diet, the glycemic index. You know, I want to emphasize fiber is huge. You know, fiber will improve your blood sugar after meals due to the fact that, you know, it will slow down the absorption of the sugar from your intestines.
So what do you think of having a fiber supplement? Let's say you aren't having a high fiber meal. What do you think of increasing your fiber in general by either drinking a supplement or taking a pill?
Yeah, I think that's fine. And actually, I was going to talk about that a little bit later when I talked about supplement therapy. But I think it's good. You know, you don't want to... You can use psyllium husks or something else. I hesitate to some of the like Metamucil and things like that. Sorry, I shouldn't probably be naming brand names, but just things that we don't want, things that have like artificial flavors and colorings and all of that kind of stuff. So plain old psyllium husks will work.
Psyllium husks. How about flax, ground flax?
Yeah, that's great.
Chia seeds?
Yeah, great.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. You can throw those things right on top of a salad or another vegetable.
Yeah.
Or incorporate them into any other aspect of your diet.
Yeah.
Like chia pudding.
Oh yeah. That's good. I like it. And then the next thing I want to talk about is fats. And so we don't typically think about fats when we're talking about diabetes, but they do affect the fats that we affect the membranes in our cells. And then that affects how the cells function. And so because we know that type 2 diabetes is associated with insulin resistance of the cells, there's speculation that when we're eating the wrong fats, the membranes aren't as fluid, and can be a cause of insulin resistance. And so we need to have more omega-3s and monounsaturated fats. So olive oils, fish oils, less omega-6s. And we've talked about this in several shows, I think. You know, less safflower, sunflower, corn, and soybean oils. Those are all omega-6s. And no trans fats or margarine. Those affect our cell membranes negatively. And so...
Yeah, are they still on the market?
I know,
I wouldn't even think
really.
They'd be on the market anymore.
I don't know. Probably. and then meat from grass-fed animals. If you're going to eat meat... you know, the animals that we eat today tend to be much different than those that the early humans consumed. There was much less fat in those animals. And so we want to try and go back to that, you know, eating grass-fed animals that have less fat.
Yeah, it was probably almost 10 years ago that I had my first grass-fed steak.
Uh-huh.
And I was pretty surprised at the difference even in the texture of the meat.
Yeah.
It was quite different. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much all I would eat today if I have a choice anyway.
Yeah, that's great. Okay. So I wanted to talk a little bit about supplements. And I'm going to just breeze over the type 1 diabetes, because with that condition, it's, you know, more challenging because of the destruction of the pancreatic cells that are producing insulin. And so there's generally not a lot that can be done unless you catch the diagnosis really early. Usually by the time it's caught, it's too far progressed. And so most times those people do need to be on insulin and medications. So I'm going to skip to, you know, type 2 diabetes and just talk about some of the different things. And we kind of already touched a little bit about the fiber and how, you know, that helps to slow the glucose absorption. And Claire had some great, you know, things that she listed for fibers. And then I want to say that a good multivitamin or mineral is important for people with type 2 diabetes. There are certain minerals that are associated with insulin resistance, like chromium is a big one. Biotin is a B vitamin. And so just making sure that you're getting those minerals and vitamins. And generally I like to recommend whole foods vitamins, so they come from actually food sources
as opposed to being made
synthetic
in a lab.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then
so is there a multi-mineral you say multivitamin and multimineral.
Yeah. I mean, most the food vitamins, I whole food vitamins, they have minerals in them too.
Okay.
Yeah, many minerals.
So you don't have to look for a multi-mineral right. like you would for a multivitamin, right. is my point.
Yeah, it should be all in one. Yeah. Yeah, and then omega-3 fatty acids. This kind of goes back to what I was talking about, the membranes, and we want to have them to be the right fluidity and so that there is the insulin, they're sensitive to insulin. And then vitamin D, that deficiency of that is also associated with insulin resistance. And so making sure that you know your levels, you know what your vitamin D level is and that you're taking enough to have a level of 50 to 80 is ideal.
So to me, when you go to the doctor for a checkup or even if you have gone in for something, you're unwell, it's good to ask them about that.
Yeah.
Because they don't always order that test if you're just getting a checkup. Mm-hmm. But if you ask for a panel of something, then they'll include vitamin D unless things have changed. But this part of the country, absolutely. There's a lot of people that are low in vitamin D.
Mm-hmm. We don't get the sun.
Right.
And even it at the elevation or the latitude that we're at. Yeah. We don't get very much sun.
Yeah. Even if you're outside a lot, you should have it checked and know how to bring it up. And it doesn't come up like bingo when you take a pill. You have to build it back up.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. So there's also, I just want to mention some herbs that are helpful for increasing insulin sensitivity. Fenugreek is one of them. And then Gymnema sylvestre, hopefully I'm saying that right, is another one. Panax ginseng and Mimortica charandia. I'm not sure how you say that one, but it's bitter melon. I always call it bitter melon because it's easier to say. Those are the Latin names. Panax ginseng is ginseng. But these are all herbs that can be helpful for increasing insulin sensitivity. And so I just urge you to, you know, talk to your naturopathic doctor for more information as far as getting those herbs.
So the insulin sensitivity improving means that your body is going to take the sugar out of the bloodstream and into the cells.
Yes.
And you won't be stuck with high blood sugar.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah, that's what we want. Yeah.
So why should we do this? What's the big deal? I mean, you don't really feel any different just because you have high blood sugar. Because I have had also people say to me, well, I don't have any symptoms other than the number.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Well, it's because of the complications, I would say. You know, the negative effects of having high blood glucose are huge. Basically, the high blood sugar destroys your organs. One of them, your kidneys, is a big one. Your nerves. So people with, diabetes that is uncontrolled often have peripheral neuropathy. They can't sense their extremities.
My brother has that.
Really?
Yeah. And the upshot of that is he had to quit driving because he couldn't feel his feet.
Yeah. That's horrible.
He was not happy.
Yeah, I'm sure. It takes away your freedom and your ability to live life. Same with your kidneys. You know, you're not going to be able to filter your toxins and eventually may end up on dialysis. It can destroy your retina so you can go blind. It causes, your liver. It's often associated with what we call non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. So your liver is not working as well as it should be, which means you're not detoxifying, and it can affect your gums, periodontal disease. So yeah, this is why we want to address it, because we don't want to suffer with these conditions. And so I just urge everyone to, find a doctor that you can work with that will help you to get your blood sugars under control.
Yeah. And then I would just add that as a health coach, I help people with the sort of psychology of having to shift their lifestyle and being willing to and finding a pathway that works for them.
Yeah.
And sometimes people are what I call on the bungee cord, and they'll do great for a while, and then the bungee cord will sort of snap them back to their old behaviors. Mm-hmm. So we like to figure out how to cut the bungee cord.
Yeah.
To stay in the new space with the new behaviors.
Yeah.
And happy to be there.
Yeah. That's great, Claire. Yeah. And you're leading me into the next thing I was just going to talk about was, just making a choice to take a new direction in life can be huge. And a lot of times people, when they get diagnosed, they will be in denial. They don't want to face it and they don't want to make changes. But it's important to realize that the way that they're living is, you know, going to will have negative consequences if it's not addressed. And so I think working with a life coach or a therapist or somebody is a great way to address that.
Well, I think I do too, obviously, but I think that we can become overwhelmed and we kind of shut off if we become overwhelmed. It's too complicated, too much.
Right.
So, you know, just in general, encouraging people to just break it down into small, manageable steps, focus on one thing at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's just, for instance, say, try to get more fiber in your diet and then get really good at that and let it become more of a habit. And then you could say, maybe start increasing your exercise or, you know, just simple.
Mm-hmm.
Simple.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I did want to say that with, you know, diabetes, there is an increased incidence of depression. Because of that, you know, because of the challenges of having to change the lifestyle and becoming overwhelmed. And so it's important to find help if you need it. And find, you know, finding someone that you can work with that can help you get through it is important.
Yeah. You know, I work with a client who was telling me that she had been eating badly and we cleaned up her diet and she said, how can I be so different in 1 week?
Wow.
But she really cleaned up her diet and ate a lot of vegetables and fiber and, you know, healthy fats and lean proteins. And she said, nothing else is different except my diet and I feel like a different person.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I love that kind of stuff. Yeah. Another important thing I just want to say is dealing with stress. So, and in our stress show, we talked about what happens during the stress response, that our cortisol spikes, which is a hormone, our cortisol elevates, and then that spikes our blood sugar. And so, and it actually, high cortisol increases insulin resistance. And so finding a tool to help you with stress is important, you know, whether it be breathing or yoga or visualization or anything else that you know helps you relax and get through stressful times in your life is important.
For sure. Just not having to turn into new age woo-woo.
Yeah.
But do whatever it is that helps you balance out feeling stress so that you can be more relaxed and awake.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah, so I think we're going to wrap up here, but so I just kind of want to, I want to just bring it all together and just say, you know, the things that are important for diabetes is, you know, the diet, you know, moving, exercising, not being sedentary and, maintaining a healthy weight, you know, dealing with stress, sleeping regularly. Remember we said that lack of sleep increases insulin resistance, and just realize that, you know, taking care of yourself is a way of life, as with most health challenges. And so
if you think about diet, if you put something in your body's going to have a reaction to it. Mm-hmm. So as Thomas Jefferson said, let food be thy medicine and medicine be thy food.
Yes.
So food is as much medicine as any other pill or something that comes out of a bottle that you put into your body.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So don't underestimate.
I agree. I like it, Claire. Yeah. So I think we're going to wrap up here. Thanks everyone for listening.
And if you have any questions, you could contact Lisa at Fern Cove Medicine.
Mm-hmm. Fern Cove Natural Medicine. Yeah.
FernCoveNaturalMedicine.com.
Yes.
Okay.
And Claire, questions. You're at?
I'm at ClaireCDenice@gmail.com.
Okay. All right. Well, this is Peak Health Radio Show, where we're dedicated to educating and inspiring you, our listeners, to take back control of your health so that you can have the freedom to live the life that you desire.
And next time, we're going to talk about
superfoods, right?
Superfoods. Yeah. That should be interesting.
Okay.
We'll look forward to seeing you.
Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.